is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outloudy. Well, there are really just three stories that I see that will give you the temperament of the nation this week. Inflation skyrockets for sure. That's a big one. The abortion ruling out of Texas and the verdict on Jussie Smollett, if anybody's paying attention, right? So let's start with this big one here, the inflation and the economy and the ramifications of this. Prices for consumers jumped 6.8% in November compared with a year earlier. And we're talking surging prices in food, energy, housing, all kinds of things. And this is the biggest in about 40 years, my friends, and it has everybody's attention. I'll give you an example here. Energy prices, gasoline pump prices, we're all feeling that. Now, if you live in California or New York for that matter, potentially Chicago, you're paying a hell of a lot more than others for sure, which really, you know, rattles the brain while people vote that in and then pay, you know, $6 a gallon for gasoline with all the taxes and all on there. It's really truly a mind bender, isn't it? But you got your prices higher for vehicles. You've been shopping for a car. Surely food. Wow. The pricing of that. Housing, airline tickets, clothing, furnishings, just about everything is increased dramatically here. Energy prices have risen 33.3% since November 2020. Remarkable. Food prices up 6%. To give an example here, now all of this, you know, like real dollars. What does this mean in real dollars? Well, it's estimated the typical family spending an extra $4,000 a year because of this excess inflation. And I'm sure that varies greatly, but that gives you a little bit of insight to that. Some of the factors driving this, my fellow Americans, you know, you've been hearing a lot about the worker shortages. They're forcing higher prices to cover the labor costs. Remember, everything, you know, this is what gets me about these kinds of things. Everything always comes back to the consumer, please remember. So when they say they're raising taxes or doing this or that on other people, guess who's paying for it? Exactly. That would be you and I. That would be the people that are in middle America. It's middle class people that, you know, work for a living. Those are the people who are paying these kinds of things. So it's, again, as always, it's trickery math, Washington style, as always is the case here. Much of this can also be blamed squarely on the federal government. They provided the endless incentives, you remember, for people, you know, not to work, creating what I would call a crisis of capitalism. And friends, it's the perfect storm for the socialism business we've been hearing so much about in recent years, right? This is right out of the Bernie Sanders playbook of socialism, which, remember, to remind you, Joe Biden partnered with on the Unity Task Force, agreeing with Sanders to incorporate the social welfare values into the Build Back Better boondoggle program there, you know? So now we have a flood of government stimulus, ultra low rates engineered by the Fed, supply shortages at factories in the US and abroad. Manufacturers have been slowed by heavier than expected customer demand. Well, you've got people coming back from COVID. People want to get on with living. They don't want to stay in lockdown mode and mandates and all that nonsense, right? You got the supply chain problem, the overwhelmed ports and the freight yards, all of that happening. And all of this spells one thing in my world, and that's really one word, confidence. Confidence is waning quickly, I have to tell you. You can feel it out there. Americans can feel this slow-moving earthquake coming, and they're beginning to react to it. And that's what happens. Fear begins to kick in. The question is, how much of this is driving the lawlessness in the country? Smash and grabs, vehicle homicides, crime also set a new records, people. Not a good picture, actually. Speaking of crime, you see the case this past week, Jussie Smollett, which is a case I really didn't follow very closely, quite frankly. These cases that are blown up nationally or just over-politicized and media-driven circuses is what they become. But he was found guilty last Thursday in 5 counts of felony disorderly conduct. Everybody knew this was coming, it appeared. He filed a false police report. But here's what's really interesting about this, you may or may not know. The whole thing was, first of all, he was jumped by a pair of racist and homophobic attackers. Talk about playing to America's fears, right? Well, Eddie Johnson, head of the Chicago Police Department in 2019, said he wouldn't have pursued charges against the Empire actor if he'd simply admitted he made it all up. He wanted him to apologize and he would have let it all go. But of course he didn't. He doubled down and kept playing that. Now there's going to be a price to pay for that. We'll see what that price is just ahead. And lastly, if you can add more tinder to Americans' polarizing views and distrust of big government, well, that would be the abortion ruling coming out of Texas, 8-1. And this is another polarizing case. Interesting, but it will divide America, just as Jussie Smollett does, just as the inflation and economy does, and everything else. And there's a lot to that abortion case, and not to mention the Mississippi case, which will be coming in the spring. And that, my friends, could be another very interesting would be the word, and you could use a lot of other words there too, moment for this nation that is that is divisive for sure. We'll take all that up next, friends, on Viewpoint this Sunday. Welcome to the program here. We're going to start here with economist Harry Dent joins me at the top of the program here. He's an economic forecaster, New York Times bestselling author. He puts a free newsletter out there, HS Dent Forecast. You can get that at harrydent.com. His previous book, Zero Hour, you can get that in the America Out Loud bookstore. All his books are on Amazon as well, or in our bookstore as well. Harry, to me, is always an interesting voice when it comes to economics because he doesn't really play politics so well. So you kind of get more of a truthful picture of where things are at. So, Harry, let's start at this big picture of the debt spending. Let's talk about the printing of more money and why it matters. So the Senate voted this past week, Thursday, to approve the bill to allow them to raise the debt ceiling by a simple majority threshold, sending Congress up to approve the final budget before we go bankrupt again for the umpteenth time. Now, trillions of deficit spending are being proposed here. And to balance this, we must buy debt issued by the Treasury, obviously. To do this, more dollars must be printed. I know this is always one of your favorite topics over the years I've talked to you about. The end result of more dollars is that their value declines. And guess what that creates? More inflation. And the dollar's trickery math in Washington. Let's speak first about this trickery math and the deficit spending. And what they just did with McConnell clearing the path, again, Republicans playing games as well with Democrats to allow this to happen, I don't know, sets up some interest in politics. What do you think of this?
Well, first of all, big picture that most people don't get, and nobody still gets it in government. After 2007, baby boomers stopped spending after the biggest spending wave in history, which I forecast in the 80s, but also said after 2007, it's going to end. Ever since then, the economy naturally was slowing, and we don't want a slow economy. So that's when they got into, well, we got to run deficits and we got to print money. We've been printing money ever since the 2008 crash. And now since COVID, they printed more in the last year and a half, 2 years than they did in the entire printing cycle from 2009 up until COVID. So now they're just going more and more exponential. This can only lead to one thing, Malcolm, a big crash that brings down all the inflation, brings down all the financial asset prices. It's what people also don't get. Financial asset prices have gone up the most. And you wonder why there's an income inequality and inequality in wealth. When financial assets go up, 20% of people own 90% of those, and 1% owns 40 to 50% of them. So you get this income inequality and polarization. All this stuff happens in times like this. But the money printing, it was already happening in the last boom, but the money printing since 2008 has exaggerated all of this, and it's wrong policy. It should have never been done. You should print just enough to ease, but you have to let the bubble wind down after a bubble period, just like we did after the roaring 20s, and they didn't do it. They went in denial. It's denial. Right. So this is what they're going to get, a bigger crisis now because of this, and this is going to be the trigger, Malcolm. This thing, along with the China's all of a sudden testy over Taiwan. Well, wrong time to do that when China's the biggest bubble of all. So China's got very bad policy right now. They're going to help trigger the bubble. This helps trigger the bubble. I think you're going to see the biggest crash we've seen in our lifetimes, most of it in the next year, 2020. I mean, it could be starting now.
Yeah, we're headed somewhere. You know, I want to tell you, Harry, over the years, as you've seen this coming like a slow moving train, and as an economist, you look at things under the radar than most of us do. So you have a different perception of things. But when you've talked about this over the years, you know, I'll be honest with you here. I always thought to myself, well, I hear you, Harry, I would say to my, but, you know, I think the American mind and American ingenuity, I think we can sort of get over that. And in other words, I was always trying to be an optimist. I was hearing you. But I thought, well, we still have an out. But I have to tell you now, the icing on the cake with what's happening at the clip of spending we're doing right now, I would have to now fall in line to say that I don't see an out anymore. I think you're exactly right. I think we're headed toward a cliff that is probably totally unavoidable. And I'm not sure. Are Americans prepared for this?
No, they're not, because what they learned wrongly, from my point of view, oh yeah, we may have recessions now, but they can print money and we get over them. It's no big deal. What economists don't understand, Malcolm, recessions are absolutely necessary to capitalism. You can't have free market and expansion and the freedom to do that without clearing out the dead weight. A lot of businesses are going to do the wrong things. Trends change. And you have to let, we have 22% companies, Fortune 500 companies, that can't pay their debt service. It's called zombie companies. These companies need to restructure debt or go under and be taken over. See, we American ingenuity can work if we flush out the dead wood again. But the governments don't want a crisis on their watch, no Federal Reserve chairman, no president. So they keep printing money, which is like taking a drug to make you feel better. And how does that work out in the drug scene? Eventually, you have to take so much it damn near kills you or turns you into a maniac. So this is bad policy. And the public has grown to think, well, it seems kind of fishy to live off of printed money, but it has worked now for 10 or 11 years. And that's the illusion. We're going to find out. Doesn't work.
Yeah.
And we're going to out within a year, in the next year.
Well, let's keep in mind, a lot of people think government plays the role of God, Harry. You know, they really do. And they do believe they can do it. Yeah, they do. And they think they could just do this. And we've been, you're right. And these generations now have been born into this. They don't have a clue. That's why I asked you the question there. All right, let me ask you this. This Build Back Better, wow. And I was thinking of you as this thing was getting sausaged through the program there. And I was thinking, my golly, we're just setting ourselves up for such a fall here. Now, the CBO, okay, so they score this thing and the program, a lot of trickery in here. But, you know, this is where, I mean, you talk about, fake news and fake math. They say it will cost zero, which is remarkable that the American people would buy this sort of craziness, Harry Dent. I just can't imagine. But they're really saying zero. It's like, what sort of drug are they on? Now, the CBO comes out and says, well, if you score this thing over the 10 years, we think just shy of about $5 trillion. This is remarkable. Added to the debt. Now, we're getting to some unbelievable areas. So here's what I want to ask you. Does the CBO report at all, in your opinion, based on where we're at today, and the inflation and the numbers, threaten the passage of Biden's Build Back Better? What do you think happens with this thing?
Well, I mean, it should, but I think naturally we would go with this. The thing is, we've been living on higher debt ever since we had that change in demographics to cover up the downturn, and it takes more and more and more. So that's what they're going to try to do. I don't think that people will dissuade them. I think you're going to have a crash that takes the credibility away from this money printing and the government, and people are going to realize, oh no, they're not. This is not the right policy. Because people in the back of their minds know printing money out of thin air to run a cut. Come on, I mean, you know, you got to be pretty damn stupid to think that can really happen long term. It's fine to do in the short term in a crisis, but it shouldn't become a decade-long policy, is what I said. So I think it's going to stop because it's got any bubble cures itself from going to extremes. So now we're finally getting the inflation on the back end from this money printing, and it's just going to keep going up. Anybody says this is temporary, sorry, folks, it's not. I have the best inflation indicator in the world. It forecasts the whole downturn from 14% inflation in 80 down to 1 to 2% today, all the way down. And that's what it says. Inflation should be 1 to 2%. Now we're at 6.8 and rising. So we're going to have to go into a downturn, which is very productive long term. Get rid of this inflation. It's not natural. Most important, get rid of 5.5 trillion of financial assets around the world. It really should be about 2.5 trillion, because that's sucking up capital and causing unproductive use of capital. So we have to clean out this bubble and let it burst, or we can't go forward when the millennials are about their peak spending in greater numbers starting in 2024. That's going to be the next boom. We're not going to be able to enjoy much of that boom if we don't clear out this debt. And it's unfair to the millennial generation, for these damn baby boomers, and I am one of them, to have created all this debt and not be willing to deleverage it, because we're the ones who created it, not them. They shouldn't.
Biden, let's talk about what he's saying. Listen to this now, Harry. He's saying, be patient. Whatever that's supposed to mean. Inflation will pass soon. Now, he's actually saying this to the American people. Let me get my arms around this a moment, because I can't compute this. Now, he's actually suggesting, he's spending like a drunken sailor here, and he's saying, be patient. Inflation will pass soon. What school did he go to, by the way? And the BBB, now listen to this. He says the Build Back Better deal is the linchpin for solving inflation. You can't make this stuff up. And then he goes on to say, well, it'll help the supply chain unclog and more people getting vaccinated. So everybody's happy and kumbaya, and we'll go out and spend more. Can you make sense of any of that, please?
Yeah. Okay. What caused inflation in the first place is deficit spending more than is natural, and printing trillions and trillions of dollars that goes into financial assets and inflation too. So that's how you create inflation above what it would normally be. So he's saying, oh, we need more of that. Now they're going to stimulate even more, just like they did after COVID. Now we're going to print more money and we're going to run bigger and bigger. We're going to get much more fiscal spending. That's only going to cause spending. Yes, some of this fiscal spending might down the road alleviate inflation some. Down the road. These are investments in infrastructure and stuff like that. These things cost. And when they say, no, it means debt today, and it means cost today, and it doesn't pay off, like that guy said, for 10 or 20 years. So yeah, there might be a payoff down the road, but right now, this is just more fuel to the fire. It's insanity to say, oh yeah, this program's going to bring down inflation overnight. Not a chance in hell, period.
Yeah, and then we question, is this the worst of it? Well, Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, says, going forward, we should see a steady improvement, he says. I'm not sure what he's looking at. But then he says, as the Delta wave of COVID has receded, and of course, they blame everything on COVID, and supply chains start to repair themselves, we will start to see production and shipments improve. As Andy said, he believes that inflation will begin improving with the December price report, and that by this time next year, annual inflation will be back down around 3%, closer to the Fed's 2% target. Any truth to what this man's saying?
Yeah, in Disneyland, that could happen. Yes, all this debt up, that could happen. Some of these investments will improve productivity, but that's a year from now. Between now and then, this thing is so stretched. There is no way at this point, from my analysis, that we can avoid a crash. I think the crash may have already started. We may have already topped on November 22nd in the stock market. If not, it's going to top, I think, by Christmas. And we're going to see a crash that's going to change. Nobody's going to be thinking, oh, we need to do that. Everybody's thinking, oh, my God, the economy's falling apart. Nobody's going to be spending money and nobody's going to be buying. Oh, we need to do this and that. Do a bunch of, you know, Disneyland kind of projects right now. This infrastructure, everybody's saying like, oh, our infrastructure is crumbling. I travel all over the place, Malcolm. I don't see any broken bridges. And the only potholes I see are in Puerto Rico where I live. This is just more stuff, you know, and lobbying. Oh, we need more. Yeah, you always need to improve your infrastructure. But this is not that necessary. This is going to die.
Harry, to your point, if they really spent it on real infrastructure, a bridge and a road or a port, that would be one thing, but they don't. They call it social infrastructure, which is everything. I mean, come on, Harry, it's a joke.
Yeah. That's the sort of stuff that creates higher cost on the economy, more and more welfare and all these programs to help people when things are a little down or help people that are less income. But those are real costs in total on society that only redistribute wealth a bit, but they only add costs. So it doesn't make the economy stronger, for sure. It only makes it weaker.
All right, I got to get your opinion on the Fed here a moment, because this was really rich here. The Fed appears to be surprised, I guess, by the high inflation, so he says. The chair there, Jerome Powell, he's characterized the inflation, I love this word, transitory. There's been a lot of conflict about using that word, and a short-term consequence of bottleneck supply chains. So he's calling it all just a temporary, just a transitory moment. Tell me, really, how brilliant or ignorant is that statement?
It's ignorant, because just what you started out with, Malcolm, everything's going up. If it were bottlenecks, and so there are certain things, but there are bottlenecks just in certain things, those prices would be gone. Everything across the board is going up. That comes from printing money and overstretching your economy, causing people to spend more than they normally would, and demand outstrip supply. So this is not coming just from COVID. COVID is not, you know, as big as people make it. And we already have another variant coming out, which may or may not be a problem, but it sounds like it's very transmissible, not as deadly, but just people having it stops everything. You can't be doing normal business when people are running around getting infected at rapid rates again. So the government just has to live in dreamland. And to think you can cut for 12 years, do nothing but print money and expect that to work long term already shows you're living in la la land. That's ridiculous. I mean, a third grader should be able to figure that out. You know, this is ridiculous. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in economics. And I hope I live long enough to see the history books say, what the hell were these people smoking at the central banks? And it's the central banks mostly coming up with this stuff. We're going to save the economy. We're God, like you said. No, they are not God, and they're going to find out really quick.
Well, with all this said, I really question, Harry, and, you know, you and I, we talk here about this, and it makes no sense, insensible here, what we're talking about here. You know, I always ask myself, what is their master plan here? I mean, these people can't be stupid. I mean, intellectually speaking, I mean, they may be stupid in other ways, but what is the really ultimate plan? Are they really, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people fearful right now, and not to get crazy here, but people get a sense there's some other strange things happening in our nation and around the world, quite frankly, Harry. There's an unsettlement out there of people that I've never seen before in my lifetime, in a lot of capacities. That's COVID, the economy, the world, globalism, all of it. What are they really after? Do you have any sense of this? Because they got to see what we're seeing. What's their goal? What is it?
Well, see, I think they are stupid when it comes to economy. They don't understand. I took years to research what actually drives the economy. It's not what economy, it's new generations spending more money. It's new technologies moving in on an S-curve. These are projectable things. I've been projecting them for 30 years now. And they don't get that. They don't get that we went into a long-term downturn. And they're just acting like, oh, this is a short-term crisis. And if we print enough money, we'll get over this recession and we'll be back to normal. Their goal is just to print enough money until we get back to normal. And guess what? 12 years later, you idiots, we never got back to normal. That should cause you to think, oh, maybe something else is wrong. They don't go there. They really don't understand the economy enough to even understand why we're having to print so much money. They just thought it was a banking crisis in 2008 from too much mortgage lending. That's what they think. They look at it superficially. And so how do you fix an economy if you don't understand it? They don't. We're going to need a whole new monetary system. I think this one's just going to fail. And next thing you know, after this recession, this crypto industry may take off faster than anybody sees.
If I remember right, now you correct me on this, but the markets always have a last big gasp. There's a lot of buy-in and there's a lot of activity in the markets. And we're seeing the markets are like, wow, like everything is terrific in paradise. I mean, they're like bing and a bing and a bing. Everything is up, 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 up. Is that all the setup before the fall?
Well, you know, you look for the everyday investor finally piling in. And with all this Robinhood and stuff, that's what's been happening the last couple of years. The institutional people have been piling in. That was the bubble. But just since COVID, man, the everyday people are piling in like you can't lose. People on Robinhood who don't have that much money are leveraging. They're buying call options, for crying out. They're not just buying, they're buying leveraged call options, 10 to 1 leverage or more. So this is really setting up, because guess who's going to be the ones that panic and sell and cause this 50% crash? These idiots. And I don't hate to call them idiots. They just don't know better, okay? They're just seeing this boom go on so long, and that's what happens. It goes on long enough that even very everyday people that wouldn't even normally be in stocks put their whole life savings in it, sort of thing. And that's when you see, like in 29, that was happening. That was happening in 2002, but this is the next time it's happening. And that's when you know this whole thing's got to be flushed out. And it's just, there's no cure for it but to flush it all out. And tons of people are going to get hurt when this happens.
Well,
the only way is to see it happening and get out of risk assets now. If you just go to cash or the highest quality bonds, that's the only way to avoid this. If you're in most real estate, if you're in stocks, if you're in most commodity, even gold, you're going to lose a lot of money in the next 2 years, and you're not going to know what hit you. And then people like me are going to say, well, here's the buy opportunity of a lifetime. And you're like, well, I don't have much money left to buy with it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. How to touch real fast on the real estate market here. People buying homes or not. A lot of people are moving to Florida and Texas right now. Real estate markets are booming there. Not so much in the California and New York and Illinois area. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, the real estate bubbles, just the difference between stocks and real estate bubbles all over the place at different times. Okay, stocks bubble in most of those financial assets together. And what you've seen is we've seen two major stock bubbles, the stock bubble into 2000 and then the big tech crash. And now this one in 2021. Well, the real estate bubble, the first real estate bubble, only came after the stock crash. People say, well, that doesn't work. Oh, guess what? Real estate's fairly valued. So the real estate bubble from 2000 to 2006 took off, and it became a big bubble in real estate. Now, real estate doesn't usually bubble as much or as often as stocks, but boy, that was the biggest real estate bubble in history. That crashed 34%, not as much as stocks. And now we got the biggest bubble in real estate ever. Now, this one is coinciding with the stock bubble into 2021. So we're going to see real estate stop. For the real estate triggered the last stock bubble. I think this time the stock bubble crashing very soon is going to trigger the second real estate bubble. And that's what kills the bank.
So if you're looking to buy a house right now, do you wait, or do you buy it before that happens, or do you wait?
No, you do not buy. If you've been thinking about selling, you should sell now. You got very little time left by my calculation. I warned people about this back in the late 90s as well, and nobody listened, because people are rational until it comes to something emotional like gold. Or gold and real estate are the two things people are not real rational about. Both are going to crash too. People say, oh, stock bubble, yeah, but real estate will be okay because it's a real asset. No, real estate is the most bubbly it's ever been, ever. End of story. Yeah. It will crash, I'd say 40 to 50% this time. Wow. Stocks, wow. 70 to 90%. So stocks, yeah, still more, but real estate's going to take a bigger hit this time.
Yeah, a lot of people have this misnomer with real estate, which is why I doubled down to ask you that, because you're right. They have this thing like it's, infallible, and that it's some sort of a hard asset you're going to buy and you're always going to be rewarded, but there are a lot of risks there as well. Harry, in the final moment here then, you've already laid out some pretty good steps there. I was going to ask you best advice. We're at a really interesting, traumatic moment in the nation. Best advice to Americans out there right now. What is it?
Okay. The best hedge, all the gold bugs, I debate Peter Schiff and people like that all the time, say gold is the only real money and that's the hedge. No, look at 2008. Gold looked like a hedge in the first few months and then crashed right with everything else, down 50% in a matter of months, because it's in a bubble too, okay? So the bubbles have to go out. The only hedge here is the highest quality bonds, and the best are the 30-year treasury bond, or the longest, if you're in a 401k and you've got some long-term government bond fund, choose that. If not that, a high-quality corporate bond fund. So the 30-year treasuries and the AAA 20-year corporate bonds are the best hedge for this, because they're the ones with the least risk, and all the money's going to flow from risk to low risk. So it's going to go to cash and these bonds. So that way, and I've shown like in 2008, and again, I'm projecting here, a 30-year treasury bond, even though it only has a 2% yield, give or take, could appreciate 30 to 50%, probably more like 45% in the next year or two, while stocks are crashing 70, 80, 90, and real estate's going down 40, 50. So imagine that. You're in a safe investment anyway. It's one of the safest investments long term. You're in one of the safest investments, and you appreciate because you're in the safe haven when the bubble's crashing. And then you have not only preserved your cash, you have more money, 40% more money to buy stocks and real estate at the sale of a lifetime that you will never, ever see again. That's the ideal strategy. That's simple.
Yeah,
there you don't have to do a complicated thing. Safe bonds, and then I can help people say, well, what sectors you buy in, what assets and stuff. And crypto, my God, crypto is the leading edge technology, but it's in the biggest bubble of all, and it's going to crash the most. And then, boy, Bitcoin or Ethereum, whatever surviving then, will be the buy opportunity of a lifetime.
All right, Harry, thank you. Stay close by, will you please, as we move through all of this in the weeks and months ahead, you know? So you can go to harrydent.com, the HS Dent Forecast, and get the newsletters, no cost for that. Also, the book, Zero Hour, you can get that right in the America Out Loud bookstore. It's on Amazon, of course, get it there. It's on the front page of America Out Loud as you listen to this on Sunday here, my fellow Americans. So you can get that there as well. A tremendous thank you to economist Harry Dent, and good to get some perspective on this as we're moving forward here. Now, we're going to jump into a bigger discussion now on this and so much more on Viewpoint there. I guess we'll buckle our seatbelts up, my fellow Americans, and we'll return just after the pause. You're listening to Viewpoint this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Dr. Peter McCullough. If you go to healthycell.com, you can check out the technology, the products of Healthy Cell. These are very innovative products. They are a form of bio-nutraceuticals that are bioactive, and they come in a variety of categories. One is daily essentials, which are the bioactive multi and the vegan essentials. And then the next category is performance. And this is the REM sleep supplement. I've talked about it a lot. I think it's very effective, and I recommend it for myself and for my family, but as well as my patients. I'm having great luck with this because it is such a terrific product with a blend of, I think, is what's needed for not only promoting sleep, but also getting quality sleep. And when it gets quality sleep, then there's restfulness, and the next day is better, and then the next night is better, and it becomes a progressively positive cycle for the human body. And the next product in the performance category is Focus and Recall. Focus and Recall. And I think that is the featured product that is coming into play for those with long COVID and brain fog that develops after COVID-19, the respiratory infection, but also after COVID-19 vaccination. And here is where we need the maximum defense for the body, the maximum and the most appropriate blend of micronutrients, minerals, as well as vitamins to help the body get through this difficult time. So go to healthycell.com and check out the products, and in the promotional code, use the term Out Loud for 20% off your first purchase. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. To Viewpoint this Sunday. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly, and thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with me on the mission always. This program, Viewpoint This Sunday, plays every Sunday 10 a.m. in the morning is the first edition you'll hear of that. You hear it anywhere in the world on the iHeart Radio Network. You can also hear it on our free apps, Apple, Android, or Alexa. Just type in America Out Loud Talk Radio in your stores there, or just get the links back on our main site at America Out Loud. So 10 and 6 is an encore at 6 p.m. The show goes to podcast very quickly, 3 p.m. Sunday afternoon. You'll get it on all podcast networks worldwide and on the front page at the very top of America Out Loud. It is our number one show on the platform for that reason. We just celebrated our four-year anniversary on Viewpoint, and it's an interesting show, an interesting way to do it, and look for some truth out there, which, since we surely can't get it in the media. We're going to discuss next in our panel discussion all of the various news stories right now. We'll do it with two great, great minds here. Wallace Garneau joins us. He's a political analyst, commentator, blogger, served in the U.S. Marine Corps, author of the book, The Way Forward, Lean Leadership and Systems Thinking for Large and Small Businesses. That book is in the bookstore, and you can get a link on that on the front page of America Out Loud here today as well. Dr. Stephen LaTulip is here. He's a physician, board certified family medicine, retired United States Air Force officer, an ordained minister, author of the book Unity Without Compromise. That is also in the bookstore and on the front page here as we talk here today. And his show, Unity Without Compromise, of the same name. You can hear that on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. And you can hear it every Saturday and Sunday, Unity Without Compromise, noontime, Eastern time. But again, you hear it anywhere in the world at any time. And 5 p.m., there's an encore as well, where you'll hear Dr. Stephen LaTulip and all his thoughts of what's going on here. Okay, gentlemen, I want to start with a lot of the comments of the big story of the day, which is the inflation. So, all right, so we got worker shortages, higher prices that are covering the labor costs, as they say. Much of this can be blamed, I believe, on the federal government for this, what I call a crisis of capitalism, the perfect storm for socialism. You've got all that taking place. And it's sort of like, as Dent was talking about, a lot of this is, we're asking for it. We keep doing all the wrong things, it seems. I want to go to you first, Wallace, and ask you, when we look at the big picture and you hear the economist up front talk about it, are we doing anything right at this point? Serious question now, in regards to the economy, the inflation, are we doing anything right that gives you comfort zone right now that would push back on everything we've talked about thus far?
Well, the short answer, Malcolm, is no. The long answer is that there are really two kinds of economists out there. You have what I consider the better economists, like Harry Dent, that look at the economy from a long-term perspective and that see the bubbles and that study why the bubbles occur in the first place and look at what we can do to not have bubbles in our economy. But then you have guys like Paul Krugman, who look at the economy in a very, very short-term view, that believe that the government needs to manage all of the short-term variations in the economy and needs to get involved in every aspect of the economy and every aspect of our lives. And Paul Krugman looks at bubbles too, but he looks at them from the inside. Paul Krugman very famously said in 2000, I think it was 2002, he wrote in the New York Times that what we need to do is inflate the housing market into a bubble. So he actually said, do it. And of course it blew up, but he didn't take any credit for the blow up. But even though he said that we needed to do that, he studies the economy in terms of how can we keep the bubbles going? How do we make the next bubble last longer than the previous bubble did? And there are a lot of economists that study the economy in terms of prolonging bubbles rather than avoiding them. And it's unfortunate that they view it that way because they get better and better and better at keeping the bubbles going. As a consequence, each recession takes longer to start than the last one did. And when the bubble blows up, it's a larger bubble, which means that the pain is greater. And that's what we see is we see this bubble economy that just goes from fake growth to burst, fake growth to burst, fake growth to burst. And each bubble is bigger. And boy, are we in a mountain of a bubble now.
What's your greatest fear right now, Wallace, when you look at things right now and you see this the possibilities of how far we might fall? I mean, and will it rally in? I mean, will it set up against things like the greatest recessions we've had or the Great Depression, for that matter? What do you think?
I think that what scares me the most is that we're seeing kind of a perfect storm of economics and politics, everything kind of working in what seems to be a global orchestrated manner. And I think we've got kind of three different different players in that. I think China is obviously a player, Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party. I think Putin and Russia is certainly a player, that much smaller than China, but still a player. And I think that we have kind of this conglomerate of what you might call Western socialism in Germany, England, France, Spain, the United States, all of Australia. And what I see is these three parties working together in areas where they have mutual agreement, and I see them opposed to each other in areas where they do not. I don't think, for example, the Western democracies want to see the Ukraine invaded, but that's probably going to happen maybe in a month. And I don't think that we want to see Taiwan invaded, but if Ukraine gets invaded and we sit in our hands, and I'm sure Putin has a lot of Hunter Biden original artwork in order to make sure that we do. Taiwan's the next domino to fall. So that bothers me. But in terms of what we're doing as Western society, I believe that this is orchestrated. I believe it's intentional. And I believe that, I don't think we're going to get out of this recession in a better place. I think that the government is going to take over everything as a part of this recession. And frankly, I think that's the point. I think that is the intent.
Talk about this big picture of the economy right now, he talks about Western socialism and this move to globalism that surely we are seeing right now.
Yes, Malcolm. I thought your question that you put to Harry was incredibly insightful. What is their master plan? And I don't think anybody in America or across the globe could argue with the fact that there is a globalist agenda. It is a globally orchestrated system, as Wallace just said. And I couldn't agree with that more. So what we really have to do is ask the question is, as actually Harry said, he says, they're stupid. He says he believed that they really are stupid when it comes to the economy. Now, that may be true. It may be very well true, but it's also very convenient. Because we have to ask the question, are they really stupid or are they sinister? And I am definitely of the party that believes that this is a sinister coup, not only against America, but it is a global agenda. Everything that we see points to it. And I stated in one of my shows several months back that we can expect to see an escalation of everything bad, if you will. You know, the Build Back Better plan really means destroy America quick. And that's exactly what they're doing. And I firmly believe that this is intentional. So when we see rising prices, every stupid move, if you will, seems like it is stupid, but I think that it does serve an intentional purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a master plan, and that plan is to completely take down America in every way possible. I mean, and that's what they're doing. You look at the economy, you look at medicine, you look at the politics. There is a coup in progress, and it is happening. It is escalating. And the master plan is ultimately a global government that will be ruling us, much like the feudal system that we saw many, many years ago.
I guess what I want to ask you is this, and I'm not really sure why this is. People like Dent and so many others out there, let's just say the vast majority of people, actually, I would say to you, Dr. Latula, would not really don't understand the sinister plan. They don't see it really for what it is. Now, maybe they just don't look at it deep enough. Maybe they're totally in denial. A lot of people believe that America is invincible. We'll just print more money up or do more things or worry about it or fire off a missile or blow somebody up or whatever the hell it is, which is that's all they've been born into, to thinking we are God. The country, the United States of America, is God. Somehow. And that's what's been presented to the last many generations, Dr. Latula, by saying now everybody thinks the government is God and they're acting like God. So with all that, this whole notion of being sinister, and I can't imagine these smart intellects that are all over the place, that this is what really rattles my brain. Why are they willing to go down this Piper path here of nonsense? Why?
Because it serves a purpose. I believe that the leaders who are behind this all, and, you know, we could name off all the list of people that seem to be working in harmony, but each of them, for their own purpose, their own gain, such as the CCP in Russia and Europe. You know, everybody will take advantage of everybody else to the full extent that they can profit from it. But why are they so blinded? Well, I think that the evil people who are instrumental in affecting this systematic destruction of America's economy and everything else, I think that it is fully planned and they know what they're doing. I agree with you. They're very, very, very intelligent people. They're not just being stupid and making one mistake after another. They have a plan. It is orchestrated. And that orchestration is what I call the domestic enemy against our Constitution and against our free republic. And we're going to see this progress. But the other side of the picture, and I wrestle with this because, you know, my real focus when you start talking about like God and false gods like the government, right. I think that that is applicable. So many times throughout biblical history, we have seen where God has allowed these evil people, including the followers of an evil system, those who are complicit, who are submissive to the evil system. God says, okay, I'll let you have your way. I will blind you to it. And I keep coming back to that because it seems like this is precisely what's happening right now. However, I will first off also admit that there's no way that we can prove it because God does not speak to us as he did in former days. And so we have to use our judgment. We have the Bible as our standard to determine what seems to be happening. We are told in Scripture that we need to be aware of the signs of the times and be prepared. And I see that happening, but I also see that it just appears that God is judging these people by putting a veil over their head so that they don't see what's going on. The scales are in their eyes. They have earplugs in their ears. They're just not hearing and seeing anything that is, to me, clearly pointing to something that is very, very dark. And this darkness is going to get forever darker, and we will implode. I agree with you that we Americans seem to think that we are invincible. I think we are about to learn some very, very hard lessons.
Yeah, you know, I so appreciate your answer there and what you just said. And, you know, you're so uniquely talented to be able to have that conversation because of your background in the way as an ordained minister, as a military officer, and as a physician, you're in a very unique territory to be able to have that conversation. You know, I always reference to listeners, free will is what it is, Dr. LaTulip, free will. God gave people, human beings, free will to make these decisions, how reckless they may be or not be. And it's good to point that out a moment to people just as in a sense here. I want to move on to the next story, but Wallace, I want to just get one last thought from you on this movement here that we were just discussing here. You know, let me be clear to you to say this to you. I hope, I'm praying actually, that we are wrong. I'm hoping that this notion, the sinister part I'm speaking about here now, Wallace, I'm hoping we're wrong. I'm hoping I'm wrong, totally. I this is one case I'm really praying that I'm totally so screwed up and wrong that this was just all just really injector of the wrong kind and that this all isn't in play. Is that an odd way to look at it? But I hope I'm wrong.
I hope we're wrong also. But what I would say to that, Malcolm, is that I would step back from the word sinister a bit and look at these people and these schools of thought, if you will, and see them for what they are. Because there are two schools of thought at play on amongst the left with regard to this, and they kind of play off each other. One is the belief that they are an intellectual and moral elite. You'll hear them talk about themselves in those terms as a moral and intellectual elite. Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, the Obamas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they really do view themselves that way. And when you view yourself, yes, they do. When you view yourself as kind of an elite, what you become very distrustful of is an economic system in which people other than you make all the money and have the wealth and power. And so I think they're just naturally, dismissive of free markets and freedom in general, because in a free market and a free society, the people that serve others the best are the people who make all the money. You make the things people want, you make the money. They want a society in which the leaders of society make all the money. And so they want to flip that on its head.
I want to move the meter here now and talk about this abortion ruling coming out of Texas, 8-1 Supreme Court ruling. So abortion providers can challenge the Texas law now, but only Texas licensing officials can be sued, not like anyone else, like the state attorney general. The law effectively bans abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, will remain in place as these legal challenges play out, the court says. What do you see?
Is that the merits of each case should weigh each case, and that they were not going to decide who can and can't sue other people. I mean, you can sue anybody for any reason you want to. That doesn't mean you're going to win the case. So I don't view it necessarily as even a strike down of abortion. So I do think it's worth noting that if we viewed abortion as a cause of death, it would be the leading cause of death in our nation. I mean, more people die of abortion than, or being aborted, I should say, than die of heart disease. I think we could go back to before Roe versus Wade and tell the American people that we're going to legalize abortion, but it's going to become the number one cause of death in the United States. I wonder if the public would have even allowed it to happen in the first place.
Well, I don't know. Dr. Lotula, would they have?
I don't think so. I think the primary issue is that is the unborn baby actually a human being? Does it deserve the right of human status and therefore protection under the Constitution? And that's where they intentionally want to muddy the waters.
Right. Well, you have an article up here that an essay people can read on America Out Loud. We need to settle the score on the issue of abortion. You know, that's the title of it. Of course, I would add to that once and for all. Right. Probably if that's even possible. But, you know, Dr. Lotula, whatever's going to happen with this now, we're going to, I believe this adds to really where the nation is. You know, we always talk about the revolutionary moment. This is probably the most polarizing, divisive conversation you can be having more than anything. I think a lot of people in this country would rather be bankrupt and sell the debt out and keep the abortion in place than to lose the abortion. I think that's how crazy this conversation is. What do you think about that?
I would fully agree with that. And for that reason, I believe it is perhaps the ultimate defining issue that is going to actually determine the fate of America, because how we view our unborn children, the most innocent of all humans, right. If we say we can snuff them and not blink an eye and call them non-human, then everything else, be it the economy, politics, anything, everything else is looked at through that viewpoint of saying that life is cheap. And that is the very defining factor that has caused America to rise at one time to be the beacon of light of truth to the world. And if we lose on the abortion issue and say it's okay to kill an innocent human being in the womb, the most dangerous place to be in America, by the way, then we are no longer one nation under God. And being one nation under God is what made America the great nation that it has been.
Yeah, as you point out in your piece here, the Roe versus Wade, since that has been in play here, some 93 million. Think about this, people. I mean, 93 million human beings were killed, obliterated in the womb. That's remarkable. Since 73, that's what we've done as a people, as a race, which is unbelievable. All under the guise of my body, my choice. Shut up and move on. And yet, you know, you wonder why. And there's an interesting point you put in that piece there, Dr. Lotula. You say, and listen. Listen to this, put this in context. This is really puts it in context for everybody here. The slaying of a pregnant mother is rightly called a double homicide, right? Would everybody agree with that? That's a fact. If you go and you kill a pregnant woman and she's pregnant, it's a double homicide. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Yet abortionists have accomplished a human genocide that has dwarfed the Holocaust or any other genocide to date. And they seem to still want to argue this thing. They conveniently use it as double homicide when they want to use it. But on the other side, it's not even a basic homicide. It's just like, OK, that's legit. It's your right. It's your body. This is, again, a lot of the duck speak that goes on here, Dr. Lotula. You can't make this stuff up. Whether you're a religious person or believe in God or don't believe in God, killing people just for the sake of the joy of killing her because you were stupid and didn't take the necessary precautions or whatever. I mean, the whole thing is insane. The conversation, to put it in just black and white context. Yeah.
True. I can say as a physician, I mean, I truly sympathize with people who got pregnant. For example, I've delivered a good number of babies from women who were taking birth control, contraceptive, taking it faithfully, and they got pregnant. And so the real issue is, well, where do your individual rights stop? And they stop before we harm any other human being. And
that's isn't there a pill you can take the morning after or something that does it? Is that correct? Does that exist?
That is correct. And, you know, it's a very controversial thing because many people would say, well, you've already created a human life. Possibly at that stage, of course, if that did happen, if you have a sperm joining up with an egg, then you have a zygote, which is a living human being that has not yet implanted in the uterus. So, you know, that's where it becomes gray for some people. But science defines human life, and that is not disputable. So this is the issue of abortion is not political. It is not economical. Yeah. It's not based on the social mores of the time. It is answered by science. And that's where they confuse things intentionally and introduce pseudoscience to argue their case.
All right. Well, the only other answer is not to have sex. So let me point that out to people here, please, my fellow Americans. If you're worried, you don't want the pill, you don't want the abortion, don't have the sex or know what you're doing. I mean, there is no other alternative to this thing. I just want to point out the obvious. That seems to be it exactly. And by the way, a footnote on this story, and like this, like you would believe this or not, you know, California, right? Well, they're planning to be an abortion sanctuary if Roe versus Wade is overturned. Well, imagine that. Hard to imagine, isn't it? Now, that's what they're planning out there. Wow, wow, wow. Last thing, I want to get an opinion here from Wallace, from you on this. I want to sneak in here, Jussie Smollett here. So found guilty Thursday on 5 counts of felony disorderly conduct for filing a false police report claiming he'd been jumped by a pair of racist homophobic attackers in January 2019. Of course, I already said the Chicago Police Department head there, police chief, Eddie Johnson, because I said, well, the guy had just apologized, for God's sakes, we'd have let him go. All he had to say was, I'm sorry, wouldn't do it again. But the guy tripled down and kept doing it. But, you know, all of this, but here's the thing that gets me, that Wallace said, this really disturbs me. Johnson, the police chief, says, well, I want people to understand this. Listen to these words. This was not the most heinous crime of the century. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't blow up a building or something. But, you know, I would kick back on it and say this. We're at each other's throats. Everybody is racist or a white supremacist or some sort of a name or a vigilante of some sort. You know, exactly to the point of the police chief, I would totally disagree with. There was a lot of damage done from this Jussie Smollett case. Heinous or not, or whatever happened, it creates more of the division in our country. Was the verdict just? And will he serve time? And what does that look like?
The verdict was just, he will not serve time. I think what really happened here is nature abhors a vacuum, and we have one political party, the Democrat Party, that was built on and has always been based on a particular form of tribalism. Tribalism is still alive and well in our country. I think tribalism may be making a huge comeback in our country, but the specific kind of tribalism the Democrat Party built itself on is black and white racism, specifically white against black racism. Prior to the 1960s, 1964, they were the party of white people oppressing black people, institutionalizing that, all of that. After that, they became kind of the, as Thomas Sowell would say, they didn't look at black people as being equals. They looked at them as being pets and wanted to treat them, you know, like the family dog, I guess. As Thomas Sowell put it, but it's always been based upon racism. And when they made that great flip where they went from looking at black people as inferior to looking at them as still inferior, but now we like them. They also began looking for racism everywhere, trying to find it everywhere they could find it. And what's happening is there just isn't enough of that particular kind of tribalism left to meet the demand they have to run an entire political party and half the country on it. So now you have people like Jussie Smollett. You know, they want to have that narrative, but there just isn't enough out there to cling to. And so there's all of a sudden you have this temptation to create fake racism, which is what Jussie Smollett did.
Well, there's a lot of that fake racism going on in the nation right now, I will tell you. Well, I would say to you, my fellow Americans, at this point, I would give you a wow, wow, wow. I mean, all of these stories we talk about are just remarkable. We've run flush out of time here. I want to give a tremendous thank you to Wallace Garneau. You just hear his voice there. Dr. Stephen Latula, two of the best informed, I think, out there on the platform. We really appreciate them always, their contributions here. And economist Harry Dent up front of the program, kind of a rude awakening, waking up in the morning and have a glass of cold water thrown on your face. Well, that's about what Harry delivered in the front piece of the program. If you missed that, Now, you'll see the program back at America Out Loud. Get out there and everybody share the program twice, three times over. Get people to wake up to the truth, please. If we don't get the Out Loud truth out there, what good is it, right? Don't keep it to yourself. In fact, please get over to America Out Loud and share the truth everywhere around the world. Let people know that the truth will prevail and that our motto is, mantra is as real today as it was when we started. Liberty and justice for all. It's a big undertaking, I know that, but it is our mission here at America Out Loud. Thank you for being with me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.